now playing Movie Reviews in 20 Qs.
Hello, good people.
Look at
and
that.
Welcome to the podcast.
There's a vein going on here.
I am your host, Sam Hurley, and I am joined this week to review the film Basic Instinct with the only woman that I like watching unfold her legs, Stacey Hurley. How are you, Stacey?
Oh, I'm super excited to be here, of course, and I'm glad I'm here.
You really?
To keep this under control.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to keep that up, because I am joined by two awesome, awesome people, but also probably bring you down a little bit. I'm joined by Paul and Wayne of the Countdown Podcast. How are you, boys?
What's up?
Hey, how are we, Sam and Stacey? And thanks for having us on. It's so great to be back. Wayne's first time here.
That's right.
My return and triumph. From return, I think it's fair to say, because this film, and I know this is going to get me in trouble already, this film is awesome.
It is. Fuck is it ever.
Forget about it.
Oh, we'll go through a bit of a plot for people who haven't seen this film and don't realize how awesome it is. We'll hit you guys with the plot first. So, totally. Stacey, what is the plot of the film Basic Instinct?
So the mysterious Catherine Tramell, played by Sharon Stone, is a beautiful crime novelist. She becomes a suspect when she's linked to the brutal death of a rock star. Investigated by homicide detective Nick Curran, played by Michael Douglas, Catherine seduces him into an intense relationship. Meanwhile, the murder case becomes increasingly complicated when more seemingly connected deaths occur, and Nick's psychologist and other lover, Beth Garner, played by what's her name?
I think it's Jeanne.
Jeanne Triplehorn appears to be another suspect.
Yeah, and having a look at the reviews for the movie, IMDb have this at 6.9 out of 10, Metacritic at 41%. Rotten Tomatoes, you can suck a dick as well. You've only given it 53%, but we'll give it over to the...
almost ready to storm out of here.
Same. But we'll throw it over to you, Wayne, the new boy, on the podcast. What would you give this as a score out of 10,000 ice picks?
9,950 ice picks. This I can only... I got to try and poke a hole in this thing, and I got one, but that's why you lost 50 ice picks. That's it. Other ways, fantastic. So much wood about this movie. I have lost gallons of semen to this over the years. Just like...
Oh, I feel you, Wayne. I feel you. I know there's a hole I'd like to poke in this film, but...
And you say over the years, gallons over the years.
Over the years.
I'm like last week.
Last week. Paul came into a dumpster last week about this movie.
Stacey caught me watching it on my own and got hit by a tidal wave. Just blown back down the stairs.
So glad we've already started talking about cum.
We do maintain a certain level of class on the show, which is literally none.
Which I love. It's exactly my level.
Wrong guess.
Okay.
But what about you, Paul? What would you give this a score out of 10,000 ice picks?
Yeah, look, I have a pedigree on this show for giving outlandish scores for the films, because having done The Thing and Die Hard with you, and it would be wrong of me to let the team down now. So I'm going with a paltry, by comparison, 9,976.
Ooh.
Paul likes it more than me.
Likes it more than you, yes.
26 ice picks more than me.
Slightly.
I'm right up there with you, boys. I'm going to leave the worst to last, judging by her facial expression so far. I'm going to split the difference to you guys, give 9,960 ice picks.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic.
Oh, it's and just so I've got a reverse 69 in there. That's what I'm going for.
Of course. Of course.
I cannot wait to hear
this. This is
going to
be great.
Now. This is going to be awesome.
No pressure there, mate.
I really didn't know how to score this movie at all. Usually I
how many bonus
fair
did you
idea.
Get?
No bonus.
Oh.
None of that. So I'm going with 4,999.
Oh, damn.
I don't know if I can do this.
Oh, damn. Wow, what's going on?
Fuck yeah. Well, how about we get into them? What we normally do is we do 10 questions we all answer, then move into our personal questions and follow up with a listener question. Not this week, because there's four of us, we're going to do 8 we all answer and 3 personal questions each. No listener question this week, although we do have the results of a poll that we took on Twitter the other day. But the one we start with is the compliment sandwich, which is one thing good, one thing bad, one thing good about this. Now, Stacey, you've introduced a rule recently that if you score it under 5,000, you get to give it a shit sandwich, which is a bad thing, a good thing, and a bad thing. So, Stacey, obviously you have some opinions about this film. Lead us off.
All right. Okay. So this just dipped into the shit sandwich territory. Only so slightly,
what?
Though.
No.
Oh, listen, you guys can outlaw his bullshit soundboard, okay? Just go ahead and say, Paul, eat a dick twice.
Okay, guys. Straight off the bat, my first bad thing is the score.
Oh, shit.
What?
God damn, Jerry Goldsmith, girl. What? Fuck off, Paul. Fuck off.
So hear me out. Normally, you know, I'm not really that big into scores. They're just in the background. They, you know, if they're good, you don't even notice them, you know. That.
Sure, I actually do agree with that. I do agree with that.
I'm just, yeah, so I'm watching this film and the score is so overwhelmingly, it's overpowering what you're seeing on screen. It overpowers the dialogue. It overpowers all the acting. Really? It overpowers the lighting and all the cinematography. And I'm listening to the music going, Why don't you give us more suspense? The music is telling us something is bad happening before it happens.
Yeah, that's the whole point of the
we
music.
Don't get to see it unfold. It's horrible.
The singing violin thing. That thing. I know it's real. I know it's like loud, but I think that's the mood he's going for. But okay. Interesting outlook.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not even setting a mood. It's just totally overtaking the whole movie, in my opinion.
That music gives me wood.
I don't think it's the music. I think it's your association with
definitely.
The music.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's like Pavlov's dog reaction.
That's it.
My good thing. I do have a good thing.
Oh.
I think that Sharon Stone's wardrobe and style in this movie, her character, she's very stylish and it's very timeless.
She is off and the chain hot stylish, man.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Take the word stylish out and Wayne was right there.
No.
And yeah, it's timeless. So she's not stuck in that 90s kind of fashion.
If you're a white girl who can wear white, you got some shit going on.
It's interesting you say that about the fashion because what I noticed it was that the guys all dressed pretty well. Even by today's standards. But the girls, other than Catherine Tremell, looked awful. Like, she had worn suits with her massive shoulder pads.
Because it was the 90s.
I know, But it's funny how the colour, the suit styling of Nick Caron in particular, he could get away with that today. No worries.
Possibly. For the record, the 90s is the ugliest period in fashion. It's not the 80s.
Yeah. And Wayne would know.
Everyone's suit was massively big. It's just, peasant dresses. Come on. Anyway, so, yeah, okay. Exactly. Okay, all right. Interesting. I agree with that one, Stace.
Oh, thanks.
For the record.
Okay. And my final bad thing is the story is just not kind to females at all. Mm. It just shows females in such a poor light and it actually shows every character in a poor light, but we'll get on to that later.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not good.
Sweet. Would one of you guys like to lead us off with your guys' compliment sandwich?
Go away, wait. I'm going away. Yes, do that too.
Go away, wait.
My compliment sandwich is as follows. One, this is odd, fantastic score. That was my top bit.
Absolutely.
My shit part in the middle is not so good man ass. All right?
Oh, saggy bum. Saggy bum.
I know. And you know what? I personally didn't think it was that bad, but a lot of people talked about it and had a good look at it the other day. I'm like, it does tend to have a bit of a fold
down
the bottom.
Was it you that told me your sister was like, were these droopy buns?
No, Michael Douglas actually talked about this.
Oh, it was him.
He actually said, he goes like, I get busted for having droopy buns. Like, what? Okay. I'm like, oh, damn. So, you know, he's been told. My other good bit, the under bit, was awesome cinematography.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So just, I love how it sweeps out. So, yeah.
Well, my comment sandwich, first of all, has to be, I don't understand how no one's talked about her yet. Sharon Stone in the role of a lifetime. Absolutely nailing this character.
I think Michael was nailing her.
What?
All right.
She draws you in completely. She is mysterious. She is, I don't care what your poll says, Sam, the best femme fatale this side of 1960, as far as I'm concerned.
Definitely.
She's
up there.
Perfectly cast. She personifies this dangerous character. And even the way she vacillates between being cold and hot, so to speak, towards him is perfect.
Do you know how she got chosen for this role real quick?
She was like the 13th person.
Yeah, yeah. Paul Verhoeven just knew her from Total Recall. Yep. And he said, you know what? Let's try this, Michael. He's like, no. Finally, they read with her. Oh, okay, her. Mm. So, yeah, she was perfect.
I racked my brain for years trying to find fault with this film. And I was always coming up short, except for some of the acting's a little bit on the nose. And yes, and it can bring the movie down a little bit. And Beth Garner's character is not the best, but more on her later. But anyway, what I have recently learned is that DNA testing was around in 1992. Yes. And Joe Esterhaz's script completely ignores it. So that is that's
they could have solved it in like a day.
That's enough on the film, exactly. And then honestly, here is exactly what I prepared for my third part and my second compliment. The score to this film is note perfect. Jerry Goldsmith composed it and may as well have a permanent track in my head. I pretty much lead my life to this score in this film. It's incredible.
But to be fair, Paul and his fucking movie scores. He talks about it all the time.
Which gives me more cool.
No, he has like CDs of this shit. I'm like, who the fuck got a damn CD?
I own the CD.
Yeah, he owns the kids out of it.
So you've actually listened to the score, Paul, without the movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
This is fascinating, and maybe it should have been my controversial opinion.
Yeah.
But yes. Normally on this show, we would never talk about a score because it's not something we noticed often. But for me, it was just so overwhelming. Yeah. I couldn't ignore it.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
I did laugh my head off. I showed Stacey your tweet, Paul, about how the score was amazing and stuff like this. So this is just like right after she'd mentioned it, after we watched it, she was like, this score's horrendous. I was like, would you look at this?
Hey, well, you know.
Yeah. My compliments have already been said. I think this is shot beautifully, and I think Sharon Stone gives an amazing performance. I'm echoing you two guys on that. My bad thing is the interrogation scene, okay? We all love it. She unfolds her legs. But if you look at the reality of what's going on there, it's fucking bananas, man. They're interrogating her in a shooting gallery. She smokes 3 cigarettes back to back to back. And at no point are any of these 5 policemen saying, hey, no, we'll answer the questions here, lady. She's like, oh, have you ever fucked on coke, Nick? Oh, can you give me a ride home, Nick? It's like, you're a suspect in a fucking murder trial, lady. Shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah.
Good call.
That's number one done. That moves on to question number 2. What is it there, Stace?
Okay, so what's something in this film that you noticed that you don't think other people would have immediately noticed?
I noticed that assistant director Skinner is in it.
Yes.
I only noticed it now. In that thing, I was like, holy shit, it's Mulder's boss. So I was kind of impressed with that. And later on in that movie,
effectively, this is the prequel to The X-Files.
Oh, yeah, you're right, exactly.
He goes on to be in the
FBI.
Right.
He's like, oh, I do believe that there's aliens out there. Look at that fur burger. Okay. By the way, just on this point, assistant director Skinner in this movie, all right? When Nick Curran chucks a shit in the police station,
pulls a gun on him.
He pulls a gun and sticks it in his head. Yeah. I'm like, is that how you control people in the police? I'm like, shit.
Right to the bottom of his skull, eh?
I know, it's under his neck. I'm like, holy shit. He doesn't like him at all. Anyway, that was the thing I thought I noticed that no one else did, but I guess other people did. So.
I did have a similar thought, but actually what my answer to this question is relates to Beth Garner. So the clinical psychologist for the San Francisco Police Force, who's about 28, and she brings in an expert to consult on violent murder. What was your specialty then that got you into the gig here if you weren't familiar with forensic psychology and the like? Presumably you know something about trauma because you'd be dealing with police officers who are traumatized all the time. What causes trauma? Well, violent crime. So it doesn't really work there. And then I think they state that Catherine Tramiel's either 29 or 30. I couldn't remember and I was too lazy to go back and check. And they are in the same class graduating from Berkeley.
Yeah.
So she is 29 years old. Jeanne Triplehorn looks younger than that. Yeah, I'm not sure that any police officer worth his salt or her salt is going and spilling all the beans to her. Yeah, I call bullshit. You need at least 10 to 15 years of experience before they even look at you for a job.
Okay, in case anyone doesn't know this, Paul is by profession a psychologist.
Yes, that's right.
So he's like, I can't believe this particular technical fucking detail that fucking no one else would fucking notice is actually a thing. Eat a dick. No one knows what the fuck you're talking about. I don't even know what the fuck Paul just said, everyone.
Well, that would mean it's another show. It's just another episode ending in E.
I think that's a really good point, Paul.
Thank you, Stacey.
Oh, you got it. Wicked.
Wayne is off the show. Stacey's on. If not for that pesky baby coming along, you could replace Wayne.
The baby could replace me, man.
For me, it was the sex scene between Jeanne Triplehorn and Michael Douglas. There's a fucking aerobics class happening in the next apartment block over.
Right. I didn't know what it was, but I saw the people, so I'm glad you could tell what it was. Yeah,
yeah, there was 4 or 5 people doing an aerobics class, all jumping around and shit like that.
If you were doing an aerobics class and you looked left and there was some nasty, foul, rough ass sex, I'd be like, fuck this class, I'm going to that window.
That would have to look left very quick, very quick, because it's all over very fast.
That is true.
You know, there's really very weird playing during a
blink
rough sex
and you miss it type stuff.
The other one I noticed, and this is a little bit of OCD or something coming through, was that Gus at one point goes on about the Hazel Dobkins case, and he's like, that's one case I couldn't forget. And if you looked at the computer system, it said that she got put in prison in 55 and got out in 64. So he would have been all of 7 years old when that shit was happening.
Yeah, I was giving that, I had the exact same thought, Sam, and I was giving him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's a young-looking 55 type thing.
He's got the Keanu Reeves going on. He's actually fucking 80 years old, but he's looks 40 something.
Oh, shit. Good one. Didn't think that.
Yeah.
So mine was, there was one particular scene where all the detectives were in a lift going upstairs, and I noticed that they all have the same hair style, and it was a blow wave of some description. So in the hair and makeup room that day, someone just said, right, we're doing this today, that's it, every character's getting this hairdo.
It was like some North Korea shit where it was like, okay, this is great. The government issued haircut, you're all getting this, good luck.
But it was a slightly stylish, it wasn't just like, yeah, it was slightly slicked back, wee bit wavy to the side on one particular side, and they all had it.
Yeah,
it's the 90s, man, I'm telling you. That's it. Or they had one makeup artist who could only do one hairstyle that day.
Yeah,
like you
yeah.
work on everyone.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. It took me out of the movie, man. I couldn't concentrate.
And if not for that moment, she would have scored over 5,000. God damn it.
Yeah.
Okay. What deep philosophical debate arose in you during this film?
All right. So, look, I'm not sure I can refer to it as deep or philosophical, but something definitely arose in me during this film.
Are you making that joke? Jesus Christ.
Slightly more seriously, I did contemplate how far I would go for the ultimate high, like in or out of the bedroom.
How far would you go?
Would I and others, you know, so you guys and anyone else out there.
No, we want to know about you.
Really not go to scratch the itch when it comes to that ultimate sensation-seeking moment.
So your the thing that arose in you other than your Johnson was that yes. you... Yeah, okay.
Like how far would you...
Did you come up with an answer or is that coming up? So
well,
to speak?
There's another question on the agenda yes, which may address
I'd seen
that.
That.
So
okay.
We'll move along.
Not bad.
I used to rent this video from the local video store in my small hometown. One of the things that used to happen every time we got to the interrogation scene is that as soon as you go to part her legs, the videotape starts scratching and itching and all this other stuff. And it was like everyone and their dog had tried to pause the video at that point.
Absolutely.
And so I was telling a guy about this when I was living over in London. I told him that story. And he's like, that was the same as the video I used to get from my local video store. And I was like, really? And then I got talking to another film nerd of mine. And he was like, that was the same thing as me. So I'm starting to think that there's videotapes the world over that had scratchiness on that one location in that tape. And I'm wondering how many more are out there. Probably millions.
Every single one that we ever saw was like that.
Thank God. Eventually. Digital. That's all I can say.
I know. Digital.
Exactly. Yeah.
Other than the fact that it can't be broken by pause buttons, it's also much clearer.
Oh, look, Sharon's doing it. If you get those good... The good video where you're back and forth, Sharon's doing a fucking can-can, you know what I mean?
There's a couple of gifs like that. Yeah,
totally.
My debate is really quite straightforward and it would negate the need for this entire movie. Why doesn't anyone in San Francisco have ice trays?
Yeah!
That's a good point.
He's like,
cubed
he's like, you pulled
ice.
Up the thing, Kmart, $1.65. I bet you a bag of ice would have been cheaper.
Yeah. Very
exactly.
good point.
Ice cubes, people, come on. It's the 90s. It's not like 1900.
Ice cubes actually weren't invented until 2007, Stacey.
Ice cube trace.
He just had a bag of frozen water in his freezer. Who does that? Well, my number one, I don't know if this is a philosophical thing, but it certainly is as deep as I get. In the opening scene, right, Nick Curran walks in and there's all the CSI people examining the crime scene. And then that guy's got the black light sort of glasses on and he says, there's cum stains all over the sheets, right? So I'm like thinking about it and I'm like, wait a minute, he was inside her when he came. So if he was inside her when he came, why are cum stains all over the sheets? She must have gotten up after she killed him and did a Taylor Swift Shake It Off and get that shit all over the place. Can you imagine that scene?
Yes. I'm just imagining you doing one of those breakdancing moves, you know, when they jump on their back and spin around like a sprinkler.
She's doing a windmill on the fucking head.
It's been exactly.
Or, you know, maybe there was some spillage / maybe...
All over the sheets? Well, he would have had to...
Maybe he's one of those men who can just go many times over.
Like you when you were thinking about the other... Yeah, no, sure, fair enough. Maybe he came all over the place like in previous bangs.
That's what I'm
saying. And then she fucked him the third time and killed him. And still did some Taylor Swift shit.
Yeah.
That was my philosophical debate, everyone.
Welcome to my weekly
there
life.
There you go.
That also moves us on to question four, which is the first of our Patreon questions. This question comes courtesy of the amazing man that is Dave Baker, who runs his own Patreon at / your favorite. Great Patreon that you guys should all go check out. Now, what would he like to know there, Paul?
Which two characters would you most want at your house party?
First one I want to have is Gus. He knows how to party. We see him at that cowboy bar and he knows how to get fucked up. And he's just a nice, lovable chap.
That's true.
And massive debate around this one, and I'm probably erring on the side of, yeah, I'd have her there, which is Catherine Tramell, because I love playing games when I get on the piss, and she loves playing games. I reckon she'd be perfect. The only problem there is that every single one of my friends there would be trying to bang her, and... No, I could probably get away with having a couple of my friends murdered. Yeah, I'd definitely have you there.
Do you want to single out any names there, Sam?
No. Machu.
Okay. Look, I, to be honest, wouldn't want any of these characters at my house party.
Boom.
If I absolutely had to, it would be Gus for the aforementioned. He seems like a fun guy. And Roxy, because she seems like a total bitch and quite dark in this movie. But I think if she was away from her head-fucked situation that she's in, she might, you know, let her hair down and relax and have some fun.
She knows how to dance. I'll give her that.
Oh, yeah.
Roxy can do security for your fucking party, okay?
Absolutely.
Like, oh, totally. I get that.
Would not get her to drive me home after the party, but yeah, no, she'd be pretty good.
My characters are definitely Catherine and Beth, okay? Because I want some fucking, I want some drama at my party. They turn up, see each other, like, I ain't seen you in a while. And then maybe we get them both drunk. You know what I'm saying? And so,
I see where you're
going. And then they disappear for a while, but then we get to talk about it. It's great. It's a great party.
Yep.
Interesting.
Okay, disappear. Wayne has rigged up the entire house with cameras for security reasons.
Purposes only.
Not that far away, my answer to this question is, well, Catherine, duh. Who doesn't want to get shot down by her when making their approach?
Me.
And then it'll be fun, as you said, Sam, to have all your friends make the approach and also get shot down. But you can still admire from a distance. And this is weird, a little bit different to you, Stacey, but I'm leaning towards Roxy. If only because it looks like Catherine doesn't mind splashing around her cash on drugs and alcohol if she's in her happy place with her friend,
Look
Roxy.
At this guy. He's got a theory. He's got an actual plan.
Yeah.
Let's see what's going on here.
Gus nice. Was a close third.
And that moves us back to question number 5, which, well, we occasionally run this question, and because we've got these two guys on here, we have to, which is, what is an unusual top 10 list that you guys would have this movie on?
This is on my top 10 list of movies I never thought I'd watch. And to be honest, that list was about 100 long, and what are we up to? Episode 93? Or 92?
You bitch.
You broke me, Stacey. I'm now coughing so hard in the background.
Hey, but I have watched it, so, you know,
that's
all good.
Great for, like, humanity. You want my answer now?
Of course, yeah.
Okay. Top 10 nipples.
There's 5 answers. Top 10.
Woo! So is this like 1 and 2?
Wait, we'll be a set of 2. Yeah, we'll be a set of 2.
Yeah, okay, good. Just making sure.
No, just your left one. Just your left one. That'll be 3. Number 2 will be...
Yeah, I'm leaving out righty because righty isn't tidy. Okay, so mine is top 10 films that corrupted me for life.
Yeah.
Did it really?
Oh, yeah, clearly.
Because now you need, like... Yeah, okay, sure.
I'll let you draw your own conclusions.
Yeah, hey, sense. Paul, did this movie have anything to do with your choice of profession?
Possibly, because we both tried to sneak into this film underage.
Yes.
One of us was successful and Wayne wasn't.
And then you got to walk out and go see motherfucking...
Yeah. And so it was year 12 when we saw this movie. So I guess, yeah, I tried to be a journalist, failed that, and then became a psychologist. So, yeah.
Oh, what a cracker. My one is top 10 films from an actress who, like the rest of the catalogue, don't care much for it. And I'm talking like lead performances. Like, yeah, sure, I enjoy Total Recall and she plays a good supporting role in that. But most of her other films, oh, can't stand them here as a lead.
Are you trying to say that Sliver's not a good movie?
Sliver was a fine movie, had a bad ending.
Terrible film.
It was a fucking horrible film.
Question 6. What character has probably gone the longest without showering?
And this question comes courtesy of the amazing woman that is Emily Higgins, who runs the Tasteless podcast. A podcast in which she compares 2 movies. One is unfairly hated or forgotten, and the other one that everyone loves and she thinks is pretty average. But what do you guys reckon? Who do you guys reckon has gone the longest without showering?
Oh God, Roxy. That's right, because after she's been coaching basketball and doing her own carpentry all day, you know she ain't got time for a goddamn shower, okay? She's playing fucking hockey matches and shit. She ain't got time for that shit, all right?
True.
So, yeah, it's going to take a while before, you know, I mean, she'll look up good every now and then, but it's a while between dry showers.
Oh, it's slightly different. I went Gus. He doesn't look like he cares too much about things like personal hygiene. He's just busy. He doesn't have a partner because we know that because he talks about get laid by goddamn blue-haired women. But he's got no one has to go home to and get spruced up. He just goes straight to the country and western bar and gets smashed every night after work.
Yeah, that's right. Then doesn't pay his bill.
Yeah, and then, yeah, he goes to walk around paying his bill.
He was on my short list. I went with the drug dealer in the nightclub. From my experience of drug dealers.
Oh, yeah, good one, good one.
They don't leave the nightclub and they just stay there partying, you know? That's all he does. Hangs out in bathrooms but not in showers. That's what I'm going to do.
All the less grosser.
Okay, so I'm going with the police guy who is in charge of the records room. He's in there.
Oh, yeah.
He's got his bloody gradient, like, glasses, sunglasses on in a dark room. When he, like, what's he up to?
He's the most redneck dude in the world as well, eh? Who's apparently living in San Francisco.
He knows himself.
Center of hippies. He's just, hey.
Yeah. Oh. There'd be a lot of tampering going on with records and evidence and whatever the hell he's looking after.
You mean he's sweating DNA all over evidence samples? Question number 7 there, Wayne.
What is your most controversial opinion about this film?
Well, look, here we go, Stacey. Prepare yourself. Okay. This is one of the most underrated films of all time. Right, look at the Metacritic scores. Look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores. It is beautifully shot. All the things we said before, basically. Perfectly lit. It's a noir film, you know, neo-noir film from the 90s. The DOP, by the way, the director of photography,
yeah,
Jan de Bont.
Oh, is it?
Oh, sorry, Jan de Bont.
Really?
Which is why it looks so gorgeous.
Speed 2.
As I said, best femme fatale this side of 1960, fight me, and contains one of the most intriguing murder mysteries put to film, and ends, I think this is really important, on the perfect note.
Yeah.
Not to mention the sex scenes are pretty hot.
I would agree, and well done on pushing that aside.
Even the gore effects are done by Rob Bottin from The Thing fame.
Holy shit.
Really?
Yeah. As much as we all think Michael Douglas, yeah, he's well cast here. He's a bit old.
Great.
He's a little
great.
Old.
He's fine.
But he's a good foil for her. And even she has said, gone on record in the past, she never felt comfortable around him. He's got that much of a presence, that much of a sexual charisma. That
oh, I agree.
She never felt like, oh, I'm okay here. Even though clearly she was the apex predator in this film.
Oh, yeah. Good. Okay.
It shouldn't be unfairly maligned as soft porn. That is basically what I'm trying to say. Right, Stacey?
Yes, that's totally fine for you to have your own opinion.
Diplomatic answer there, Stacey. I forgot to mention that this question comes courtesy of Julio of the Contrarians podcast, another awesome podcast in which they typically rage against the Rotten Tomato machine and go to bat for films that basically...
Or shit on films, which are good.
Yeah, basically do vice versa. I had a couple, like, you're sort of mentioning about Michael Douglas and Sharon Stone. I didn't buy their chemistry whatsoever. That was something that is...
Really?
On rewatch. But my most controversial opinion about this film is there's a lot of people out there that think this has an ambiguous ending, and I've got no idea what gives them that idea. It's very clear.
Really?
Yes. I didn't realize it till I was like looking up like top 10 random lists that this is on, and it was like top 10 ambiguous endings. I was like, it's very clear that Catherine Tramell does it. And the reason why we know she does it is because at one point, I don't know how Michael Douglas doesn't notice this, he's a dumbass, but he goes over to her place and she's written this book, and he reads a line in the book that says... And then he finds his partner murdered in an elevator. And then he has this sudden flashback when Gus is going up into that building. He's like, holy shit! And he goes running into the building and finds it. How would anybody else know that aside from Catherine Tramell? You know, it's supposed to be linked to Beth. It's supposed to be linked to Beth, but Catherine Tramell writ that book. She knows what's going on.
Good call, and actually a little bit similar to one I've got, but please, Stacey. Yes.
Well, I'm going to go one step further and not even talk about the ending. I'm talking about, we know what's going to happen from the first scene.
Do you?
Yes. So the first scene where she murders the rock star, we know it's Sharon Stone. Everybody does. The music is telling us it's the murderer. It's just so obvious. I was just like, why? This whole movie, I was just like, why are we watching this? There's nothing mysterious about this.
If you've spent the same amount of time staring at Sharon Stone's body like I have, it is very obvious that it is her.
Yeah. It's definitely, know a body when you see it. And I get what you're saying, Stace, because it's like definitely it's definitely Sharon Stone playing the murderer at the beginning, because you can recognize that body. Fine. But if the movie itself is trying to fool you a la The Usual Suspects, it could play music to suggest that, this is the person you think, but it might in fact be just doing that to fool you. So I don't know. For me, it was all like, the reason there's all these wigs and shit like that is that anyone could be anyone. Roxy looks like her, Beth looks like her with a wig, and so on and so on and so on. So, I mean, for me, the ending with the ice pick and everything, that could have been planted by someone. She could have changed her mind. Is the idea that she changed her mind, she was going to kill him, but that's it?
Yeah.
So she had her hand on it, and it wasn't just left there by some other?
All right.
Yeah,
and
I guess
if you need any more proof, I refer you to these three words. Basic Instinct 2.
Yeah, this was made before that. We don't know how that was. Yeah, we have to...
Which, Stacey, you should rush to watch.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So anyway, but that's a good call. My controversial opinion has a lot to do with what Sam said. Now, Sam, you said that Michael Douglas sees in her apartment that she's printing the end of the book, which talks about how the guy gets nailed by a fucking ice pick. So this is so weird. My controversial opinion is that Nick wanted to kill Beth subconsciously. Okay.
Ooh.
Here's why. Yeah, I know. Ooh. Here's why. Yeah. Because he sits in the car when Gus goes up, says it ain't gonna take long. Halfway, well, you know, 10 seconds after Gus leaves, Nick just has this moment where he goes, holy shit, he remembers that thing that happened that he saw on Catherine Tramell's printer. So he rushes up after Gus, is too late, someone's killed Gus, he pulls Gus's gun, and then who's there but Beth? He now knows, like you said, that Catherine is the killer because only she was the one who wrote what just happened, yet he still shoots Beth.
True.
What is that? He wanted to kill her.
Holy
shit. He wanted to kill her.
Well, the film makes the point subtly, or maybe not so subtly, refers to it time and again, that maybe he's got a killer instinct. Like maybe he likes to kill people.
Exactly.
And so he has an opportunity here and he kind of follows this basic instinct that he has.
So it's also him, yeah. I mean, when she oddly does take a Bart Simpson fucking thing.
Why the fuck?
Point at him.
He's like, put your hands in the air.
And she's like,
why
no,
doesn't
no.
she?
I know. She's stupid. It's kind of on her as well.
For the record, if any of you point a gun at me and say, put your hands in the air, I fucking will.
I will totally do that.
Yep. I will drop my Bart Simpson key ring, which matters so much to me because it's got the key to your apartment because I love you so, so fucking much.
Exactly. And not point it at you accusatorily inside my pocket. What the fuck is that? Yep. So, yeah. That was it. Sorry. That's we've been thinking about it too much.
No, I'm dropping my scores. 9,973.
There you are.
Oh, anyway, awesome. That moves us on to the final question of our all-ask questions. Yeah.
All right, here it is. What quote from this film would you definitely not want to hear after sex?
My one's a line from Michael Douglas after the internal affairs guy comes to get him in the pub, and he's like, stop writing me, man. I'll kick your fucking teeth in.
Can I just say that's very funny, especially because we have another answer coming up, which I've used that one for, so...
What do you got, Stace?
This when one of the detectives goes up to old what's-his-face. Well, who is it when he's in the on the computer in the police station? He goes, have you got nothing better to do than jack off to a damn machine?
Okay, well, mine is, imagine you're on the job, you finish it, you turn to the right, and someone says, what's the chief's office doing here?
My answer is from the psychiatrist, consultant psychiatrist character played by character actor extraordinaire Stephen Tobolowsky. You're dealing with someone very dangerous and very ill.
And then you go detoling your dick and shit.
Pretty much, eh? And that moves us over to the personal questions. I am going to start you guys off with my first set of three questions that I came up with while watching this film. Now, we've sort of mentioned in it that most of the people are complete idiots, but which one of these characters do you guys reckon most deserve to have been fired immediately?
Oh, it's absolutely got to be Beth.
Yep.
She is the most unprofessional.
100% statement.
I mean, I could have made a case for any of those detectives, but Beth, by far, she's the linchpin of stupidity and unprofessionalism in this whole entire movie. What does she do? She just does so much. She's sleeping with her patients. I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do that. Is she sleeping with her patients, but... She has slept with the key suspect of this investigation.
Yeah, doesn't clear any of this information
anyway.
And she
lies about it.
Yeah.
And, oh, she's just hideous all around.
Totally stole my thunder there. I know I'm jumping ahead of Wayne here. Yeah, all the things you said. She also gives a patient file to someone else.
Yes.
She gives it to Nielsen. That's pretty shit out
to be
well.
Fair, he might have bought it.
Yes, no boundaries. She turns up to Nick's house at 10 p.m. and won't let even when he tells her to. She calls in an expert consultant, as I've mentioned, on something she should have some half an idea on. And later, she turns up to Nick's interrogation when the whole fucking department knows they're banging and testifies on his behalf.
It's almost her superior that's the worst person that should be fired.
Yeah, like, true.
Listen, I know you fucked everyone in this case, but you need to be on it.
The one throwaway, because I thought, oh, maybe no one knows. Maybe it's a secret. But then Walker says, it's almost like he started banging her just to get off with the IA. And I'm like, what the fuck?
That wouldn't play today.
Sorry, back to you, Wayne.
Okay, yeah. The person who should be fired immediately is Nick. He's the worst detective ever. Roxy says to him at the beginning, like, you're wasting your time. Catherine didn't kill him. And then instead of following up on that point, he just fucks off. And then, like...
Well, he ignores that, and correctly so. I'm not sure how that's an argument.
I think that's one other thing. He says he's tailing Catherine wildly in his police car while she's driving a Ferrari on this, like, freeway. And She knows your car, Nick. What are you tailing her for? She's been in that car. Like, what the hell? What did you think was going to happen? Then he drunk drives everywhere. Yeah. Like, he drunk drives everywhere. And Beth keeps dropping these fucking clues. Well, I used to know her and this. He just keeps ignoring this shit. He's a crap cop.
He's not good.
Fight that motherfucker.
He is a crap cop. I've got to give it to him for actually shooting plural tourists. Not one tourist by mistake. He shot tourists.
Let me just empty this clip into that crowd of it.
Exactly.
Nobody move. Those two people move. Bang, bang.
Stop coming to San Francisco, you fucking hipsters. Okay, so my question number two. If this film was wandering around in everyday life, what other film would totally hook up with this film and fuck the shit out of it?
I'm going with
give it the sex of the century.
Sex of the century.
Fuck of the century, Sam.
Fuck of the century.
It's funny.
Sex of the century.
Well, it's got to be something equally gaudy. So, 50 Shades of Grey.
Not bad at all.
Not bad.
Not bad.
What do you guys got?
The movie Bound.
Ooh.
I'd like to bang this movie. You know what I'm saying? Because they both like a little Hermes scarf tying up, and then there's a bunch of Liz action going on. So, absolutely.
That's good pick. Like that one.
Yeah.
I also went very similar lines. Nothing overly funny from me either, in the sense of we've totally synced. It has to be something sleazy, something not afraid to get down and dirty, something wouldn't be afraid to go to the places that Basic Instinct would want to go. And it still had to be something that had some budget and looked nice. So even though it's most definitely not one of my faves, I'm going with Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, good one. Ooh.
Shit, yeah, that's a good pick as well. Good work.
Yeah, actually, Tom Cruise would have added to Basic Instinct in terms of creepiness factor.
True. Now, I mean, it's hard to feel sorry for a lot of the characters in this film, and that's what sort of spurned this question. But I want to know from you guys, which character do you guys think is the real victim in this movie?
I think it's Roxy.
Mm.
She's just out there on the
Ooh,
side.
Really?
She's just trying to have a relationship with this, you know, woman.
Yeah, she's going about her day trying to murder people.
Roxy's not trying to murder people.
She tries to kill Nick with her car.
She did also kill someone in her youth, right?
Yeah.
Did she?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Does that pump your score over 5,000? God damn it.
Now listen here, Rocky, you know, man to man.
I don't know. I just think she's being treated poorly. Yes, okay, she might not behave the best to herself, but she's been treated poorly. She needs to get out of that relationship with Catherine and move on.
I think that the real victim has got to be Gus here, okay?
Me too.
I mean, he gets fucked up every single way, and he's not that happy to start with, although on a personal note, how do you not defend against a woman attacking you with an ice pick right to your face? Gus, you have a gun. Exactly. Even if she nails you once, pull it and fire it, man. Come on.
Oh, I'm not
he
sure.
He just went, boom. I'm like, come on, dude. You're big. Just fucking back out. You probably didn't get a...
I would love to test this theory in real life with you and just have some woman stab you in the neck with a ice pick and then see whether you fire your gun at her.
He's 5'0", and he's checking out a case, right? And then the door's open, and then this little, by comparison, she's short compared to him, jumps at him with this like, what the fuck? You'd be able to catch that arm, I'm sure.
Wayne is a ninja in his private life, and he literally defends against attacks all the time. So it's not fair to compare to the rest of the universe.
That's because I shoot my mouth off all the time.
I also had Gus because poor bastard just wants to do his job and stop at a country western bar and get drunk, and he's the only guy that supports Karen through thick and thin. Like, he's a good friend and he brings pizza around and it has Pizza Hut in a very prominent place in that shot, like product some placement. Obvious product placement. And yeah, you know, he was just a good guy, and he just cops an ice pick through the neck several times.
That's
because
right.
he happens to support his mate.
Right.
Yeah.
He needs some pussy. Come on.
Blue-haired women.
Don't like them.
Good answers there, guys. That moves us over to Paul. His set of three questions.
If Catherine Tramell was not a writer, what job would you be most likely to hire her for?
I had a tough debate on this. I was going back and forward, and I was like, she just likes killing adults, so maybe a primary school teacher. I was like, no, those kids would come out of there fucking way fucked up. That would be the future Catherine Tramell's. I don't want to do that. So I was trying to think of one place where we can keep her where she'd be as least of a threat to society as possible. And I'm going to go for a solo mission to an international space station.
Wow. You're just exiling her.
That would get me to space.
On a mission to heaven.
Oh, I think this is pretty obvious. I think she'd be a psychologist. She likes to get in people's heads, and professionally or not, I'm not sure, but she'd be good at it.
Do you know she'd like totally like make them kill themselves or something for
or
her
other
sick
people.
Amusement?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dirty bitch.
Yeah. Massively diminishing patient list,
No, but she'd turn people into her patients.
True.
She'd have long-term patients. They'd get progressively worse.
She'd be like Apple, where after 1 year, your device starts losing battery power real fast.
So. You've got to buy another one.
That's a good point. It's a good point.
Okay, well, I think that Catherine would be a wicked pharmaceutical rep.
Yeah.
Have you seen a pharma girls lately?
Yeah.
They're all crazy hot. Yep. So it's like, well, you know, instant hire, not even an interview. Bang.
Fair enough. All right. Good answers all. Next question. Nick Curran is a cop who can't resist the danger, according to the poster for Basic Instinct. And true to this, he put himself in some very dangerous positions, which prompted me to wonder, what is the riskiest thing you've done for love or lust?
I think in terms of love, it was like marrying a ginger. That was pretty fucking dangerous. Oh,
shit. Risky.
Gingers are awesome. We all know it.
I actually think that was the riskiest thing you've done.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm going to say the riskiest thing thus far is probably attempting to have Sam's baby. I don't know how that's going to go.
Firstly, it'll go fine, but secondly, I understand.
Good luck with that attempt, Stacey, in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
Okay, the most risky thing I ever did for love or lust, it was both because I was young, was let myself get beat up by a woman. So, that's right. Allow me to explain. In my youth, I was a foolish 17-year-old who used to do martial arts as a hobby, and in my class was an attractive Irish girl whom I totally had a thing for, but I had no idea how to approach. So, in my stupid teenager brain, I came up with this plan. I thought, here's what I'm going to do. Very ineffective. I'm going to try and get her attention by sparring with her. I'm going to allow her to tag me by hitting me, right? At full strength or whatever. And the idea was for her to strike me hard by accident, which would, in theory, cause her to recoil in shock and immediately rush over to me and be kind to me, at which time I would endear myself.
At which point she'd let you put your dick in her?
No, that was just the start. It's sowing the seeds, Paul.
Right, okay.
All right? So, I would also impress her by casually shaking off the hit and acting like a real man. Unfortunately, I'm not a real man. And when I walked into her punch, she had extended fully and nearly broke my fucking jaw. All right? I was just like, bro, all right? Then she was concerned, as it turns out, like I was hoping she'd be, but unfortunately she tagged me so hard my lip was cut and my eye was starting to water, and nothing dries up a pussy faster than a man crying. So I was just, that was, it did not work out, but that is the most dangerous thing I did.
Want to make out?
Yeah, exactly. Blood.
All right, very good. Well answered, everybody. Great, great stuff all around. All right, my last question. It's 2019 and time to remake Basic Instinct, except Hollywood being Hollywood, they're insisting on a gender swap for all the main characters. So, in the 2019 version, who plays Catherine Tramell, Nick Curran, Gus, Beth, and Roxy?
I've gone for someone young and hot, Zac Efron. Why not? Yeah. For Catherine Tramell.
All right.
Nick Curran, I've tried, like, Michael Douglas is a certain actor of reputation. I've gone with Julianne Moore. She's also a very talented actress of reputation. For Gus, you want someone that's kind of loyal. I'm going to go with Queen Latifah. For a dumb, attractive gay lover for Zac Efron, I'm going with Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
Oh, good one.
That works.
And for like reasonably attractive but still kind of scary and psychotic looking and probably wake up one morning and find him in your bedroom, I'm going with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
For Beth,
yes.
Yes, yes.
Nice. Yeah, that works. Mm. I buy that. Very nice work. Good.
Okay, so I'm going with a major hottie who I love watching on movies, Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, God.
That's exactly who I thought of.
Okay, and for the detective to replace Nick, I'm going with Kate Blanchett. Then for Gus, the jovial sidekick is Melissa McCarthy.
Fucking, I got the...
Beth, the college love interest, Jake Gyllenhaal. And the Roxy, the current love interest, Chris Pine.
Yep.
So good.
It's really good.
Could be kind of like a Ghostbusters, Star Trek, Brokeback Mountain mashup.
It's not bad.
Very good.
Okay, that scooped me on a couple of those stays. My Catherine was, of course, Chris Hemsworth as well. But my Nick was Jennifer Carpenter.
Ooh.
Ooh.
She just played that character, except a chick in Dexter, you know, there.
Okay, yeah.
Gus is Melissa McCarthy. My Beth was Armie Hammer. Because, you know, you want to rough that motherfucker up sometime,
yeah.
Right? And Roxy was actually Matt Bomer.
Ooh.
Oh, true.
You know what I'm saying? That's a good looking
guy that has one letter wrong in his name. Okay. Very nice. Well played, everybody.
Awesome. That moves us over to Wayne for his set of three questions.
Okay, my three questions go like this. Number one, Catherine Tramell mentions suspension of disbelief in the film. What thing about the movie did you have the most trouble suspending your disbelief at? So what was the hardest thing to swallow?
Well, look, aside from Beth Garner's character as a whole, I have the thing I always had trouble understanding was how Catherine Tramell rides Johnny Bars and Nick Caron the way she does and still remains appropriately mounted without tearing off his junk, their junk. As she is arching her back and reaching back an awfully long way for an ice pick, or what the film wants you to think she might be doing that. How is this pleasurable for anybody?
Exactly.
In this
situation? Why do you think they invented reverse cowgirl?
True.
When that happens, you got to lean up yourself, right? Otherwise, it's like, no, you're going to tear it off.
Yeah, that would not. I cannot understand how anatomically that was pleasurable for anybody, nor was it hitting any right spot.
That's a good point.
So this was really hard for me to pinpoint, but just the entire character of Nick. He is just shocking at his job. He just doesn't know what, I don't know what he's, he's sleazy, alcoholic, he's seriously got some problems.
I also had Nick because there's two points that made me just go, what the fuck is this guy doing? And the first is within the opening scene when they're investigating the guy's room and he just starts playing music. It's like, why would you do the stereo one? And there's that
very
moment.
Important to the investigation, Sam. I don't know how you failed to see that.
True. There was that point, and then the other point where he's fine. He's fucking blinded by the pussy, and he's fucking the lead suspect in this murder trial. But he knows in this murder case that the guy got silk scarved, tied to the bed, and murdered. And yet he still lets her do that at one point in the film. I was like, come on, man.
That's what made it so good. He said that.
Yeah, the idea is that he might die, and so he's like, I got the best boner ever. Yeah.
Fuck the
best boner, yeah.
Maybe I'm just too cautious.
Can't resist the danger.
My next question is, the main female characters in the film are Catherine, Beth, Roxy, and Hazel Dobkins. If all these women were in a street fight together, who would win?
All right, well, we would, Wayne. We would.
God damn it, there goes my answer.
Look, okay, I'll give it a more serious one. It's hard to look past Roxy. She's got the physical presence to tear everyone else into one, and Nick even backhands her, compliments her on that when saying he wants to talk to a man-to-man. Then again, Hazel Dobkins could be a sleeper because she'll be staying out of it, repeatedly gasping, oh my, before pulling out an edge weapon and slaughtering everyone while they ignore the old woman who looks like she wouldn't harm a fly.
Yeah, it's a tough one, that one. I mean, yeah. Please, Sam.
Yeah, goddammit, me and you are on the exact same wavelength, Paul. I was like, we all win. And then my second answer was Hazel Dobkins, because out of nowhere, she just murders her entire family. I reckon she'd be like, in the street fight, out of nowhere, she just fucking offs three ladies.
That's good. Before they even get there, it's like, boom, they're dead.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm going with Roxy, because I think she's just physically the fittest. And she's just like hardcore. She'd totally beat them all up. Catherine's not interested in killing females. She'd just be...
Yeah, but I feel like Catherine would manipulate Roxy somehow.
What, in a street fight?
Yeah, get her to beat herself up or something. Just go to town on herself.
All right, my final question is, what line from the movie might be appropriate to say or hear after you take a dump?
Well, as Sam said for his earlier one, mine is, stop riding me, man, or kick your fucking teeth in!
Oh, that's such a good one. I'm trying to toss up between two of them. One of them was, do we have a time of death?
Oh, fuck, that's good.
Okay, my quote is, were you ever engaged in any sadomasochistic activity?
For the record, I had, do you always keep old newspapers around?
All right, that takes us on to my question. So my first question is, when did Catherine find time to write an entire novel during the span of this movie?
Excellent question. The time between her telling Nick she was going to use him for a character and then the time she's like, I'm done, is like 5 days, I reckon. So my theory is that, here's how she got it written. My theory is that Roxy is her ghostwriter and she's secretly been working on the novel between hockey matches.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying? That's why, like, when she buys the farm, then she's done with the novel. Boom. So that's how I think she did it.
Well, clearly it was between washing the blood off herself and pulling the pubic hairs out of her teeth.
We call that dental floss.
Come on now.
And all I'm going to go with is cocaine's a hell of a drug.
I like Wayne's answer the best because it's like they could have had most of the book already written before the start of the movie in that case. Because she would.
Oh, you were looking for serious answers. Sorry, I'm on the wrong podcast.
Yeah. What's going on here?
Anyway, all good answers. Okay, my second question is, which character from this film would you get to investigate the murder of a loved one?
Fucking no one, but go on.
I also had to scour my brain for this, and I ended up with Andrews, who is the African-American gentleman who's one of the other.
Sam.
He seemed to be the only one who actually knew what he was doing, like working a computer and stuff. So.
He's the best of the lot.
Yep.
I had Lieutenant Walker. Apart from during the interrogation scene where he's completely overawed by her as well, he seems to be the only one who has his head on even remotely straight. He's telling people to go and do things that detectives presumably would do. You follow her. You go and check out this guy. You look up the college records back then. Like, he's telling them all what to do, what they should just naturally do themselves. True. So he's as close as they come to a competent police officer.
That was the thing. Like, I swung completely outside of any of the police officers in this, like, especially Newman or any of those other guys. Oh, that greasy fuck trying to fucking solve my friend's murder. I actually went with Roxy purely for the one scene where she pops out in the bathroom. You know, Nick goes in, doesn't notice her there, leans his head down, pops his head back up, and she's there. So I reckon she's got some good ninjuring skills.
Stealth.
Good point.
Stealth.
So more like a private investigator.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay, right, guys. Would being murdered after sex by early 90s Sharon Stone be totally worth it?
It's the question that needs to be answered, really, doesn't it? Yeah.
I had to think about this one, Stay. Like, if you had asked me when I was 15, I would have been, hell yes! All right? But right now, it's hell to the no!
Wow, really?
No, it's not! Look, there's plenty of good pussy out there that won't kill you, Paul. All right? I'm telling you, well, plenty. But
yeah, I don't know.
Fuck you dry.
But at least, like, don't, you know, I mean, did you know that in this, them filming this scene, Sharon Stone was plunging the ice pick into a bag of ice that was on Johnny Boz's chest? And she went right through the bag of ice and put two holes in his chest. Like, that happened during filming.
Shit.
Well,
and that's a guy acting. If I was there for real and that happened, holy shit. I would never, it's not worth it, Stace. It's not worth it. Well, it's close, but it ain't worth it.
Apparently, I'm still 15 because, yes, 1,000 times, yes. Like, get me an ice pick and a white silk Hermes scarf right now. Find me a time machine. Let's do this shit.
She got that mug and a couple of loudy pussy on you. Done fried up your brain. What the hell?
Paul, I can't believe you say that, but I'm right there with you as well.
The real fucking shock here is that Wayne said no.
Yeah. I thought about it. Yeah, me too. Oh, yeah, but no.
Here's the thing, right? Like, we all die one day, right? Like, we're all going to die. And if somebody said to me, you can die while banging Sharon Stone, I mean, how do you have
1992 Sharon Stone.
1992 peak Sharon Stone.
I'd consider it for 2019 Sharon Stone, let's be honest.
You're saying I'm not busy this evening?
Oh, well done. Well done.
And that takes us down to the end of our questions. Now, as I mentioned, normally we have a listener question, but we didn't have a listener question. In fact, this week we put it out there for a poll and we basically asked you guys, because obviously me, Wayne and Paul have some incredibly strong feelings about this. Stacey, not so much, but we have some incredibly strong feelings about this. And we decided to ask, who is the best femme fatale from the 90s? And the options were Catherine from Cruel Intentions, Xenia Onatopp from GoldenEye, Catherine Tramell from Basic Instinct, and Catwoman from Batman Returns. And looking at the results, Xenia Onatopp got 13%, Catherine from Cruel Intentions got 15%, Catherine Tramell got 22%, Catwoman got 50%.
Wow.
No!
What the fuck? Paul put a goddamn effect on. Why don't you eat a dick?
How could you people get it so wrong?
I don't get it either.
Hurt my soul.
I don't get me wrong. I love Michelle Pfeiffer, but I was Catherine all the way for me. What do you think, Stacey?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Every day of the week. Right, Stacey?
Right, Stacey?
I actually voted on this. I can't remember who I voted for. I might have voted for Catwoman, actually.
God damn it.
No, that figures. That makes sense.
Oh, fuck. We're not allowed to watch movies again anymore, Stacey. I have to watch these movies on my own in a quiet room with a thing of tissues.
Oh, this is what I've been waiting for our entire relationship. You to just watch movies without me. That's great.
Thanks, Stacey. But bigger thanks to these two for coming on this podcast and joining us to talk about Basic Instinct. Thank you so much, guys. Been a pleasure.
Yay!
been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having us back to talk about such a wonderful film.
Oh, yeah.
And especially with Stacey here too.
No, that made it all better. They made the whole thing better.
What's the word looking for? A frame, a perspective that is totally different is made it all the more special. So you guys are awesome. All the best with the baby.
Yes. When
he/she? You know?
She. Little Catherine, Catherine Hurley. That's
Trebell. Catherine Trebell Hurley.
Stacey just freaked out.
Oh, please.
Nick Cage got vetoed, so we're going with Catherine Trebell.
How much, what's the patron level to name your baby?
20 cents.
Oh, come on, Sam.
Thanks so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And it's great to have Wayne here too.
Thanks,
guys. Yeah, thank you, Wayne. You're quite the hard to get on a podcast. And so we're very pleased to have you guys on, both of you.
Yeah, you guys are the shizzle. I like that shit. Oh. So nice work.
Good man. Yeah. And why don't you guys tell all of our listeners about your guys' show?
Basically, it's Wayne and I ragging each other's choices as we do a top 10 every week for be it about movies or TV.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to determine who has a superior list. And you can search for us, Countdown Movie and TV Reviews, on Google, Twitter at the Countdown PC, or on Facebook. We got a list of community for people who are into the show, and you guys are both members, and thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem, man.
Yeah.
Awesome community, brilliant podcast. Absolutely love tuning into you guys every week. It's been an absolute treat. These guys gave us two questions for our 100th episode, so as you all know, we're trying to get through as many of those guests on our 100th episode as we can, and so it's been absolutely awesome to get you guys on such an awesome, awesome film. Yeah, so some upcoming episodes that we're going to do is we're obviously going to do the new Spider-Man movie that's coming out in the MCU. Haven't worked out who's going to be on that one yet, but we also talking about early 90s films that are absolutely amazing. We're having Emily Higgins from the Tastelessness podcast on to talk about Silence of the Lambs. Nice. That'll be coming up soon. Yeah, got a couple other things, but obviously our 100th episode's coming up soon, which we've already recorded and is fucking awesome. So that'll be on our Patreon soon.
And can I say, you guys are on our show this week?
Yes. Oh shit, how could I forget the most important part?
Well, no, not the most important part, but just a part is that, yeah, come over and check out Sam and Stacey on our show for the top 10 movie parents.
Yes. Can't wait. There will be a link to that one in the show notes below. Anyway, that is thanks from me.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Thanks very much. Talk to you guys again soon.
Woo! Bye.
Hello, good people, and welcome.
Oh, God, I fucking can't do this.
I can't do this shit with a cold.
You sound like Nicolas Cage.
Give me a word, man. That's all right.